Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 4, Episode 23, To the Death, teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolfe, and directed by LeVar Burton. To the Death aired on May 13th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, following a hit-and-run attack on Deep Space Nine by a band of renegade rogue Jem'Hadar, Sisko and his crew are joined by the Dominion on a mission to locate the rebels, who have discovered another Iconian gateway.
This is the one where I had to remember what an Iconian gateway was.
Yeah.
Even though I rewatched TNG recently.
But that's like early TNG too. Like what season? Right. Like you have the episode is Contagion. Is it season one or season two?
I think.
Or is it later on?
I don't remember.
I always get that episode confused with the one where I think it's season one that had like with the Takan Empire, where there's like that gateway guy, or the.
I know, I talked about this later, but I guess we can talk about gateways now. Basically, the gateway allow, like, instantaneous travel over enormous distances, like, at least 70,000 light years. So you can see how that could be a threat to anyone if someone that your enemies with can have access to something like that, just for those who have not watched TNG.
Yeah, and it's season two.
Okay.
And O'Brien was actually in that episode too, so it's like Worf's all like, I was on the original mission, and Miles is probably sitting there like, me too, bruh. I was there.
I really found that original like picture of the Deep Space Nine at the beginning of the episode like upsetting. You know, see how the station all damaged and stuff,
missing a whole pylon.
I know. I definitely was happy that we got to see that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, like in some ways too, because like obviously, like I get it because it's TV production and time and like everything else, but often like you get a lot of like reused effect shots, and they made a completely like. New one, and just for literally that one shot on the view screens, I thought that was like, you know, as upsetting as it was or could be, was like kind of cool.
Yeah, I felt the same way because you don't often see that.
No, I was just gonna say that it's almost like there could have been a whole other like episode that showed you about like Kira and stuff managing the crisis. You know, managing that instead of like, oh no, this catastrophic thing happened. Okay, back to the ship, and now we're on this mission.
Part of me wonders if, like, because Nana Visitor's pregnant during this.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that had something to do with why she was only in the episode for like a couple minutes, or like a couple scenes. Although I didn't like research that or anything.
Yeah. Well, Armin was pregnant too during this, so that's why he's only in that initial scene too. No, Armin wasn't pregnant. But we've jumped right into it, Elise. We didn't start where we normally start. Did you or did you not remember this episode?
So I did not remember this. I was like watching this episode. I watched it with Tessa and AJ on Friday, and I was like, I do not remember this at all. But then later, there was like a scene where Omediclan and Sisko were kind of like having conversations where the differences between the two like populations kind of comes out. And I remembered that being a theme. I didn't remember the specific words, but that felt very familiar to me. But like, I couldn't have told you like what episode that was in or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was really excited because we got to meet Wei-Yun finally, played by Jeffrey Combs.
Meet Wei-Yun and say goodbye to Wei-Yun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to just drop a spoiler here and say that. Are you okay with this? I don't think it's a big deal.
If you care that much and are watching for the first time, skip ahead 45 seconds.
Yeah. So Wayun is a clone. I don't know if all Vorta are clones. I don't really remember.
Yeah.
But we get Jeffrey Combs back as like Wayun with like each version of him has like a different number. And actually, this is Wayun 4. We looked it up because we were like, isn't this his first episode?
Yeah. Yeah. And the one, I think we get Wayun 5 for like the majority of the rest of the series. Yeah. But then, yeah.
Yeah, there is one that's like sticks around for a bit.
Yeah, he's the one during like season 6 and stuff like that.
Jeffrey Combs, I don't remember where I saw that he said this, but he basically had a quote about his character, and he said, "Wayun is the snake of the universe. He is a smiling car salesman who will tell you anything to make you feel as if you're the most important thing in his life, just to get you to buy his product." And I'm like, this is so true. And then he also said that he based his character off of a scene from Barry Lyndon, which is unfortunately on my shame list. But yeah, I need to watch that movie at some point.
Yeah, it's good. I've only seen it the once. I need to like rewatch it, but it's one of those movies you can kind of like dedicate an afternoon to, just because it is so long.
Right.
But yeah, like in terms of like it thematically, where I can see where Jeffrey's coming from on this, a movie folks might be more familiar with is Spielberg's Catch Me If You Can, and Emmett Porquinton on Twitter from the Nauticast podcast, I think it was on his Letterboxd or something like this, he was talking about kind of around making AI and then a little bit after Spielberg was kind of like in his Kubrick era, and Catch Me If You Can is kind of Spielberg's take on the whole like Barry Lyndon thing. So again, they're not exact, they're not like identical really in tone, but the idea of like the themes and like, you know, identity and story and like things like that are definitely, there's definitely some crossover there for sure.
Yeah, Barry Lyndon's one of those films that I actually don't really know anything about, and I don't plan on looking up anything before just watching
it. Yeah, yeah. Seen Eyes Wide Shut, yeah?
I saw it once, but it's on my rewatch for this year list. Like, I plan on rewatching it this year.
Yeah, so Barry Lyndon's, like, to Candles, what Eyes Wide Shut is to Christmas Lights.
Interesting.
Because okay, like they,
so maybe I'll watch.
Oh yeah, well Lyndon, you don't know anything first. About it, anything more, so I'll That's stop fine. But yeah, there's like he shoots it all like in natural light and like with candlelight on the inside scenes, so it's like really cool.
I'll watch Barry Lyndon first then. So there were a couple things in the production or the story planning about this episode that I found interesting. Basically, Robert Hewitt Wolf had noted that the few times we've really had Jem'Hadar episodes, it was The Abandoned, and it was that was the episode where they found out the species, because there was, like, a baby that grew up real quick. And then we had Hippocratic Oath, which is the episode where a bunch of Jem'Hadar said that they wanted to be, they didn't want to be addicted to the white anymore, and tried to kind of, they kidnapped Bashir and O'Brien to help give them a cure to their addiction. So Robert Hewitt Wolf wanted an episode where the Jem'Hadar were just like functioning as they normally would, rather than showing us outsiders or like groups that, you know, obviously the kid that was abandoned didn't know his culture, and that other group wanted to be like separate. So this like gave us a little bit of like a vision of what we're up against, more than anything, like the mentality of how the Jem'Hadar think and act. I also note that about 30 to 32 seconds of this episode was cut even before the first screening because of violence. The censors and I guess also Rick Berman decided that it was like too many. Like apparently 52 Jem'Hadar had been killed, 10 of them by Dax, 7 by Sisko, and like, it's interesting because some people thought it was like Iris Stephen Bear, like was I don't remember if it was him, but like some people were upset by this, but like Terry Farrell actually felt like it was too much, so she was happy with the cuts.
I was gonna say the fact that, like, you know, they're using the like bladed weapons thing, which, like, rightly or wrongly, like, oh, they're phasing someone, it could be stun. Like, no, it's like you're slicing someone's neck, like, at one point. Like, so I, like, mm-hmm. it's pretty bloodless, but, like, I kind of get it. Like,
I get it too. I mean, I feel like it would be in a Star Trek now, probably. Like, I could see it, like, in a Discovery or something specifically.
For sure. Because
that show is pretty serious.
Yeah.
But it's just funny. I watched the movie The Beekeeper last night. Have you heard anything?
Yeah, it's the new Jason Statham one. Was it good?
It was dumb, bad, and fun. So yes, it was good. It was one of those, like, I've watched it, I had a great time, but I probably don't need to ever see it again.
We'll never think about it again. Yeah.
There was a child, like, 3 seats away from me. And this movie is rated R. It's extremely, extremely violent. And every other word is either some form of fuck or some form of bee or beekeeper. Obviously, that last one is not a curse. But, like, I think this kid was, like, between 10 and 12, maybe. It was hard to tell because it was dark. But, like, it was weird to me that this child was in there. Obviously, like, this Deep Space Nine episode would not have been as violent as this rated R movie that I watched last night. But, like, anyway, I think violence is, like, it doesn't need to be in, like, that much of violence doesn't need to be in a Star Trek episode. At least a 90s Star Trek episode.
Well, yeah, I hear you, and, like, I see what you mean, and I don't necessarily disagree, but, like,
I mean, violence, like, Dax is killing someone.
Yeah, no,
like,
no, I hear you. It's just, like, always interesting to me, and, like, again, this is probably a topic for, like, a whole other, like, podcast or something, but the ways in which, like, as a culture, we're definitely more permissive with violence and depictions of violence than we are depictions of human sexuality, but that's a whole other thing. That's a rabbit hole we don't need to go down.
No, right, and now. I've been trying to, like, I've been kind of conscious of that while I was saying all of this, and, like, not, yeah, not.
Yeah, but if someone's gonna hijack it down a thought hole, it's gonna probably be me.
I guess what I'm, yeah, because I don't want, like, I don't think that, like, sex should be, I don't think that things should be censored, but I do think parents are, you know,
yeah,
there are,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
we
yeah.
don't need to have, like, you know, murder on a network TV in the afternoon. Like, that's fine. Lastly, I just wanted to say that this episode was actually filmed after the next episode, The Quickening, but this seems to happen a bunch on, at least once every episode, or sorry, I apologize, once every season. I feel like there's, like, a reverse order release or something.
Yeah, no, well, and it's funny that, like, you mentioned that, because I noticed that too, because, like, I've been watching it lately since they took it off the one streaming service that I had, which I don't even have anymore. I've been using it on my DVD, my old DVDs is how I've been watching it, and they have the production numbers, but they have the episodes in a certain order on the screen, and most of the time the production numbers line up, but this time they didn't, and I know that we had that issue before a couple seasons ago, where on iTunes it was in the production order, not the broadcast order, and we both watched different episodes. So for a brief time this morning, I'm like, do I need to confirm? Like, what if we both come to this recording and have watched different episodes? But then I was like, wait, Elisa started the notes. So I went and checked. I'm like, okay, we're watching the same episode. Cool.
That's funny. And then there was the episode where it, like, was cut differently depending on,
oh,
it was, like, the
yeah.
same episode, but, like, the scenes were in different orders. I think, yeah. Was that the season premiere of this season?
Yeah, so, season? Like, because there were the different, there's two versions of The Way of the Warrior, right? Because it aired as a television movie, and then they cut it differently to be got a two-parter it. For syndication, right? Mm,
got it, yes. I'm sure we discussed that.
Some stuff around,
Before we get into, like, the basis of the whole episode, I do want to say that I really enjoyed how worried Quark was about Rom at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Only to threaten to kill him for scaring
him. I mean, yeah, once you know it's safe, then you can pretend you don't have feelings anymore.
Yeah, Quark cares.
I did want to, like, call it as well, is Ametacalon, the leader of the Jem'Hadar that we end up working with, is played by Clarence Williams III.
We're part of this crew.
Yeah, who was Link in the late 60s TV series The Mod Squad, which also starred Peggy Lipton, who most people might know from later generations as Rashida Jones' mom. And also it was made into a movie in 1999 with Claire Danes, Omar Epps, and Giovanni Ribisi. So that whole, like, 90s trend, like even Mission Impossible or the, like, British Avengers, there's that whole trend of we're gonna make movies of 60s TV shows because the people, you know, in power at the time were like kids in the 60s and the 70s, right. So yeah, it was like they were basically like cool cops. They were like youth that had like sketchy backgrounds that got in to be like, you know, the hippie cops to protect the hippies from the adults that were like leading them astray and doing crimes and shit. I've never actually seen it, but
you just unlocked a memory that I had forgotten, and it was the 1999 Mod Squad film existing. And now I can't remember if I've seen it before. Like, it has all the makings of a movie that Elise would go see in 1999. It had Claire Danes. It had Omar Epps. It had Giovanni Ribisi. It was called The Mod Squad. Like, Elise at that age would have totally gone to see it, but I don't remember. I was obsessed with
it. I figured you'd remember the movie. I didn't want to, like, mention it to you ahead of time because I wanted us all experience this together live and on air, but...
I just, like, wait for the day when, like, you tell me something random that isn't in the notes and, like, we're just having it recorded and it's just, like, me being shocked by something just because you thought it'd be funny to, like, see how I reacted. Sounds like something you would do.
I mean, I put so many extensive notes in every week that it's, like, I would never surprise you like that.
No, never.
So this week there is kind of only one main plot, not the A plot and the B plot, and we kind of outlined it with the whole Iconian gateway stuff.
Yeah. I tried actually to, like, think about if Worf and that guy's fight could possibly be a B plot, and then I just decided it is not.
Well, no, because then you could also, because that's like,
then
color,
I'm like,
right?
Is the Odo Weyoun part C? Like, ridiculous.
Well, and then there's the Dax becoming like having that, you know, honored elders conversation with that other like Jem'Hadar. Like, there are those moments where you see those kind of character interactions and like the way it kind of teases out different kind of facts or different aspects, or may or may not in some cases be foreshadowing things that, you know, are to come and like things like that.
Yeah,
but yeah, they're not really like, they're character beats for me. They're not like separate plots. They're
right,
character beats,
right,
like within that plot.
Yeah. So I mean, we all know, hopefully, you know, everyone watched the episode, that real quick, like, these rogue people, these rogue Jem'Hadar attack the station. Some stuff is taken. And then Weyoun and friends come, and they're also after this group. So why don't we team up together to get these bad guys because of all these threats? So we have that plot, but the real story to me is the difference between the Jem'Hadar and Starfleet. And I'm more interested in the differences between the two groups than, like,
yeah,
what's you know, the actual, like, mission or whatever. I do think that once everyone was kind of on board and deciding to go on the mission together, we do get to the heart of it.
Yeah.
So I was going to kind of go over a few of the things that we've learned about the Jem'Hadar.
All right, let's see it.
We knew this before, but they're basically bred just to be soldiers. They only live a little while, so they are treated as expendable, basically. They are definitely smarter than they seem. They know about the gateway, even though Wayun didn't want to tell them. They are bred in birthing chambers, which actually kind of reminded me of The Matrix. Like those pods or whatever.
Whether they're human batteries or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. There are no females. They have no there's no recreation, so they're not fucking. I don't even know that they would have reproductive organs. I don't think that that's something that was discussed, but I can't imagine.
They're just all Ken dolls down there.
Exactly.
Or angels in Dogma.
Yeah, I actually thought of that first. they're at full maturity within 3 days, and they do not eat, sleep, and if you reach the age of 20, you're an honored elder. So this is just a very, kind of reminds me of the clones a little bit in Star Wars.
The clones are not Ken dolls, though.
No, they are not.
Canon. But they're also cloned after, off a human template, right? Whereas the Jem'Hadar,
so it's
the implication
thing.
Is they're not.
Yeah.
But no, I think
they're still bred for fighting.
No, totally. Yeah. And kind of like the clones in the Clone Wars. And I think this is maybe kind of the most important thing we learned about the Jem'Hadar in this episode is they do have free will, yes. Right? Yes. You know, they're bred to consider the founders gods and whatever, but even Wayun's well, not totally, which is why we had to addict them to a narcotic.
Yeah.
Right?
But that's not even really true. I don't think the Vorta fully understand the Jem'Hadar, because I feel later we find out that the Jem'Hadar are kind of just no, we're completely devoted to the founders,
Yeah.
We don't care about the Vorta at all, obviously. They killed Wayun.
But again, that's also, I think, where the idea of free will and choice comes in, right? But.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
There's a quick conversation between Odo and Wayun where Wayun's and it's funny, I can't not see him as a car salesman now. you know, your people want you back. They love you. And I do appreciate that Odo's just fuck y'all. Bye. I'm good. And there was an interesting bit about when O'Brien is, because they all think this is going to be a suicide mission. So O'Brien and Dax both send messages back to their families. And it's the 11th time that O'Brien has to have done this farewell message. And every time he does one, apparently he's worried that's the one they're going to end up getting.
Yeah.
I do love that Dax nicely tells him, you're going to die of old age surrounded by your family. Because honestly, that might be the nicest thing you can say to someone like O'Brien, who is a family man. And even though she doesn't think they're going to die, she still sends a video to, or a message to her mother. Do we ever meet her family ever? I don't remember them ever coming up before.
No, I don't remember us meeting them.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of fighting between the second in command of the Jem'Hadar group. What was his name? Tommen Torax. And Worf, basically Worf is acting logically impractical, which he probably does a little bit more than other Klingons, but that guy was Klingon honor or courage is blah, blah, blah is a joke. He basically thinks that because Worf's not just going to run into the battle, on a suicide mission, that he's a coward. And so there's some interesting species stuff going on there, because that guy threatens, like, oh, well, we're going to eventually take you guys over anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the whole thing about, like, the clones and now the Jem'Hadar, in my mind, I'm thinking about the movie Barbie and the Billie Eilish song, What Was I Made For? And weeping. I'm not actually weeping, but it did make me, like, sing that song for a few minutes. Another thing that was very apparent is the difference in how the, you know, Sisko and the Omediclan handles this fight. Omediclan kills his second and expects...
Kills his bestie.
I know. And he's like, yeah, it's basically ridiculous. It's like, and Sisko cannot fathom this. And he thinks that Sisko's a coward for not doing the same, and basically says, when this fight is over, you know, we're enemies again and I'm going to kill you. I do like that Worf is like, don't worry, boss. If that happens, I'll kill him. I just imagine, like, on and on, like, and then someone kills Worf, and then Dax has to kill someone, and it just goes on for the rest of time.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because this episode, and I don't know if it's again, because I think it was another, the one I'm thinking of in season two was also a LeVar Burton episode. This episode really reminded me of Blood Oath a little bit, like the final act, yeah, but the, like, oh, our phasers don't work, so we have to do hand-to-hand combat around, like, a pyramid in the jungle or whatever.
After we accuse each other of sabotage first, like, they think, like, Starfleet, like, tricked them, but it's really the
sabotage.
Gateway.
Sabotage.
That's funny.
Sabotage. Yeah.
So, yeah, they were pretty much ambushed, but... Everything wraps up pretty nicely, I would say. They are able to destroy the gateway and get away before that happened.
Yeah, like, and I think that's the thing too, like you say, like, what's the gateway? Like, they kind of just hand waved it away, and it was like a little like, hey, remember this for, like, people who did, but, like, ultimately it didn't matter. It was an excuse, like, it was a MacGuffin to, like, us team up with the Jem'Hadar.
Exactly. But I would agree. Definite MacGuffin. I do think it's interesting, though, like, after all of this takes place, Wei Yun comes, and he is very much like, oh, I'd like to see the bodies, basically. And Omediclan's like, fuck you, and kills him, because he's like, he's questioning our loyalty, like...
Yeah.
And then he chooses to not kill Sisko, unlike he had previously threatened, and he says, enough killing for one day.
Well, also, Sisko, like, does him a solid and takes that hit.
Oh, yes. I skipped that over. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sisko saves his life, and I think that Sisko is just being himself, and I think Omediclan realizes that they were successful still, and they were victorious, even though not everyone died.
Well, and Sisko has that great line, because Omediclan's like, I threatened to kill you, and you saved my life. Why? And Ben's like, if you have to ask that, you'll never understand.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I like that. It was a fun episode. I just, like, didn't need to watch it a second time. Like, I was like, okay, that was enough.
Yeah, it's, you know what, the way you described Beekeeper as being like, you enjoying it while you're watching it, and then you don't really think about it much ever again.
That's
kind of how I feel about this episode.
Yes.
Was like, I didn't hate watching it like I hate others.
Yeah, I was laughing, is it my favorite? And having a good time.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that you wanted to discuss about this episode before we moved on? Oh, I hear Ellie.
You might have heard her earlier. Her tail was, like, thumping, too.
Aww. I didn't notice.
No, not really. Like, again, it's, like, yeah, it's a fun, fun time on your couch.
To the death. I'm joking. You don't have to die.
Well, now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water possibly being a reference to Alta from Altair 4 and Forbidden Planet, but in the context of Star Trek, first being ordered by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I will say I am thirsting for the Diet Coke that is sitting next to me this week.
Yeah. Yeah, and I need some water, too. I've just had coffee so far this morning, so need to rehydrate. Yeah, it's not a particularly thirsty episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a bloodthirsty episode at times.
Yeah,
but,
that's true. Ooh, we could have been cuter if we were like, bloodthirst, but sorry.
Now it's time for the most Star Trek thing. Elise, do you have a candidate for most Star Trek thing?
To say goodbye. Sorry.
No worries.
I was going to sing that Mickey Mouse song.
M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S.
I just remember the, like, the see you real soon, like the, like how they would cut in like little phrases in between. Right. My most Star Trek thing is basically, it's like a temporary, the enemy of my enemy is my friend temporarily.
Yeah.
That feels like something that just like, in honestly is like tropey in all like science fiction, I feel like TV shows at least.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I don't know if I have like one specific, like that could definitely be it, the way like, you know, like you say the team up, because I even remember those TNG, like with, you know, the Romulans and you know, whatever. I guess the closest, because it reminded me of Blood Oath, where it's like, oh, we have to do hand-to-hand combat because the phasers don't work, and it's easier to choreograph a hand-to-hand combat than, you know, do a phaser fight somehow or something. I don't know if it's easier, but less effects.
Right.
Just more choreography.
I'm curious and wish that we could see the, like, 32-second longer version.
Just to, like, see what was so, like, yeah.
Yeah. I think we can handle it. We're adults.
I'm a man. I'm 40. Yeah. No. Cool. Like I said, season 4, episode 23, to the death.
I'm glad it didn't
kill
us.
Solid 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I agree.
The Muse almost did. The Muse a couple weeks ago
Which
did.
Is the same rating I gave The Beekeeper. I actually wavered between a 2.5 and a 3. And I'm like, you know what? I laughed a lot. It gets a 3.
Yeah, that was like, I saw Book of Clarence on Friday, and I was like,
I don't
like
even know what that is.
Oscillating between 3 and 3.5. Do you remember Harder They Fall on Netflix, the Western?
Oh, I didn't watch that, but I remember it existing.
Yeah, so it's James Samuel's follow up, and it's like, in the same way that like Harder They Fall is like him doing a Western, this is kind of like him doing like a biblical epic.
Got it.
So, yeah. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Blue Sky at Matty Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.